Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
From Riverwalk Studio, this is the Cubic Shenanigans Warhammer Podcast. Welcome to the Cube.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of our podcast. This is Dan and
Theo Clapper.
Okay, and we are the host for your Cubic Shenanigans Warhammer podcast because we are going to be covering all three aspects of Warhammer. We're going to be doing 30K, 40K, and Age of Sigmar. I want to start the show by giving a couple of people special thanks. First of all, Josh Cook, who helped me put together the equipment list for this bad boy. I had no clue what to get, what to do, and so he was talking all kinds of foolishness, and in the end, I got all the right kit, so that was really nice. And then I want to, I want to thank Jacob for getting my H4N Pro all set up for me so we could record properly and have the proper amount of channels. He was like a bulldog. He just would not stop until he got this right. He had a ride coming. He was like, no, you gotta wait. So that was really cool. So thank you guys for getting us going on this. We really, really appreciate your help, especially being a tech deficient person. That was really awesome. So I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of the podcast. We are a commercial-free podcast, and what we thought was important, a couple of things. First of all, we have a really vibrant Warhammer community here in Milwaukee, and we thought it'd be nice to showcase some things and give you our perspective from where we are. And the second thing was there are a lot of people. I know, Theo, you play more than one system, yes?
Yeah, I play 40K, Age of Sigmar. Once a month, I'm running a couple different games, either, you know, role-playing or the tabletop. So it's just, you know, a nice variety of stuff to keep, I guess, grounded in the wargaming community instead of just Games Workshop products.
Okay, so we both play multiple systems, and a lot of great podcasts kind of focus on one system. We just thought it would be helpful for people who are folks who kind of cross over between to have that perspective brought forward as well. And then what we want to do to start out today is just talk about a brief history of each one of us in the hobby. I started really in earnest in 2001. I built Space Wolves Army, but my actual start in 40K was with Theo. You and I had been talking about this last week, was with a Space Hulk.
Yeah, the Space Hulk board game.
Yeah, the board game, and you were talking about the war with the Deathwing and the American Indian motifs, and it was awesome. And it just the storyline just got me hooked, and it took me a few years, but I got started, and I was part of a crew that was at a place called Napoleon's here in Milwaukee. A gentleman named Fritz and his son Jason ran the store, and what was amazing was at night, on Tuesday nights, they would open the store up. He had this basement Fritz did, and he had these tables downstairs that literally you could drive a car onto these tables, and they would not collapse.
That's cool. No, that's why I've been to Napoleon's a couple times, but I was never down to the basement. I knew my dad who got me into this. He ended up bringing me down there. It's always across the east side, so it's, you know, a 10-15 minute drive. So I was like, oh, do I want to go that far to go to the store that didn't have any tables up on the ground floor? I'm like, oh, there's always the cool army guys here. Everything I loved, you know, I knew it was a suit of armor, you know, sitting in the corner. And the whole feel of it was just really cool, really, you know, not really intense, but it was just really deep, I guess. Just the whole feel of the store was.
So, and then there was that secret basement that you didn't ever see. Really active community down there. So I was part of that for several years until the store closed, and then didn't really play 40K for a while. And then there was a group that was founded here called D Company. So if you look it up on the if you look it up on the internet, it's D Company Forum that you can look up. And we are a group of gamers here. And Theo and I are both part of that group. We have the joy of being part of that group. It's very, very active, especially in the 40K side. There's some folks who do play 30K. But I played Space Marines after that, and Grey Knights, and Tyranids, and I totally and completely regret selling my nids. That was just the most stupid thing.
Kind of seems like the story of, you know, everybody's hobby going, oh, I don't play these guys in a couple of years. Okay, I can get rid of them. And all of a sudden, you know, something changes and, oh, why did I get rid of those? And that's like the worst part of the hobby is, I'm running out of shelf space. Do I like get rid of anything or do I just get more shelves and see if that works? So,
I think orcs and nids are two that have been the biggest people with regret. Then I got some Iron Hands and some Admech, which I'm in the process of selling. But now I play Thousand Suns, which I've always wanted to play ever since reading Thousand Suns by Dan Abnett.
Okay.
I was really inspired, but there's no really way to play them in the old Chaos Codex. So now it's with all the great stuff we've got. So That's kind of my background in the hobby. Theo, how did you get started in the hobby, and where are you right now?
My dad got me into it back when I was like 7 or 8 or so. He always got together with his buddies since he was really young. But I kind of grew up with it in the family. Either like board game night, where my folks didn't get along very well, so my dad usually just played with me. I started playing 40K when he got into the Space Hulk when I was 9 or 10 or so. And it was really cool because you had like a squad of Terminators and the handful of Gene Stealers, and the stories were really simple. You had one mission to do, so it's not, here's like 6 units and everything you can do. Right around when third edition came out, that I started playing that as well. I started playing with the tournaments with my dad, playing Tyranids, and it was the whole hive mind, and then it starts to like splinter off to its own splinter cell. You know, me getting my own way and my dad going his own way. So we had, I forget what the high fleet was called, but it was the two of us playing one army at the tournament. And there's a lot of people who are really wondering, when you have two people, you know, is that fair? Well, if you want to bring your buddy and you two can like talk back and forth and play one army to make sure you're not forgetting anything, or watch out for this unit or watch out for that unit, you're actually able to play off of each other and do, you know, moderately all right. I started playing on my own tournaments at 14 or so. I know the first time I played, I placed 3rd place in the tournament, and it's probably the highest I've placed since then.
Still, that's pretty respectable.
But,
that's great.
No, I've been playing 40K. As I said, I've been running the Fistful of Miniatures, which is like a generic fantasy, generally using 15mm figures. The games take about 2 hours. Currently, I'm still playing Dungeons & Dragons. I think we're on the 5th edition now, or D&D next. But no, I play for 40K. It's currently playing Space Marines, Necrons when those came out. I got Tyrion, as we said, way too many of those, and looking at, you know, thinning the herd, but you never want to do that. So I got Dark Eldar. Oh, who else is there?
You've been playing cults though, right?
Oh, the Gene Stealer cult, yeah. Hey, since like the original Gene Stealer cult came out in the codex.
Beat the crap out of somebody in big game.
Yeah, that game. No, that's like, we saw the new set of rules, we're going, okay, yeah. So this looks like it can be ridiculous. We can bring like 5,000 points of head, and it's like a two-on-two game, and that game just went ridiculous. It was truly done before like turn one, and we're just playing it out because, just, you know, one of the changes in 8th edition I enjoyed is breaking up those powerhouse units where you have your character and then 20 dudes, and you can do some crazy game breaking shenanigans, and at 5,000 points, why not? So we both took it, not realizing we both did. So we had 2 units, was, you know, the Gene Stealers, 20 Gene Stealers and the Patriarch, and all that shenanigans, deep strike, are infiltrated right next to the opponent's headquarters, and just cleaned house, like, right from the get-go. And we're like, yeah, so that wasn't much of a game, but
that was brutal. I just kept hearing Mark, was it Mark and Jack?
Yeah.
You guys played?
Yeah, and those two guys are like, yeah, this will be awesome. Oh, we're, this is bad game.
It was, I just felt so badly because it was, you're right, it was over so quickly. So you're playing cults now. What made you consider being a podcasting host? Have you always been interested in that, or was it just something that sounded interesting, or what?
Actually, honestly, it was you asking me to do this. And there's been a couple times where I want to run, you know, projects on the side, but it's still trying to find someone reliable enough to, you know, help out with it. So, you know, just being asked to help out with this really cool project made me want to help realize somebody else's dream, going, hey, I want to do a little show here, and you're asking me to do it. So I'm like, that's really a cool investment, you know, into me. Generally, I'm not really into the podcast, but I still think it's really kind of cool thing to get into. So I unfortunately haven't really listened to anybody else that you've recommended yet, but it's still a really cool idea, just wanting help with a project and just, you know, help somebody else step forward into their field they're trying to get into.
Okay, great. That's great. So that's kind of who we are, guys, and just wanted to lay that out there. We won't bring that up again unless somebody's interested. And speaking of which, we're going to have, our website is up and running. It's cubicshenanigans.net. So if you want to take a look at that, take a look at our podcast there. We should be on iTunes by next week, but we are going to hopefully get subscribed to a couple of other services and so forth. But iTunes, we should be up by the week of the, whatever that is, the 22nd, I think, of July. Also, we have an email. We have a contact page on our website, so you can contact us by email. We had thought about doing some other social media stuff, but we want to kind of keep it simple at this point. So please email us with any feedback. If it's constructive criticism, that's great. Just make sure that it's something that would improve the show. We always like to hear good news. If you have that you want to share. Also, we're going to have an active picture gallery. So if there's work you're doing on a project or something else that we talked about, you want to send a picture of it, just attach the picture and we'll try to load it into our gallery, which is also there on the front page that you can click on and kind of go to and see what other people are doing. Theo and I are going to be dropping some of our own work in there so you can see what we're up to. But please get a hold of us. Let us know what you're thinking. And we really appreciate you spending time with us today. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get to the first regular part of our show, which we call On the Bench.
Okay, folks, we're back, and this is our first regular segment of the podcast. It's going to be called On the Bench, and we're going to talk about our hobby progress, and usually we're going to add something at the end in terms of tips on hobbying or things that might be helpful to people. Today, we're going to talk about priming a little bit and how we do it and some products we think might be helpful. So let's start with recent hobby progress. Theo, what do you got going on?
Actually, I've got a couple little projects working on. One, I've actually been trying to get a box together for board gaming supplies. You know, you're going to need your tape measure, you're going to need your dice, you're going to need your index cards for notes as you go. I've just trying to get a box together that'll have everything I need for both Age of Sigmar, 40K, I do other, you know, non-Warhammer games as well, but it's just, you know, everything that'll still be useful for everything, try to keep them all in one spot. Instead of, you know, halfway army box, a Space Marines or army box, the Chaos Warriors, trying to pull out the tape measure, make sure to put it in which army box, you end up losing supplies. But it's also just trying to, you know, keep track of different tokens for everybody. You know, who gets to attack first in the assault phase. You know, I got picked up a little box of bumper chips, actually. Red, white, blue. Red for attacking stuff, blue for smoke, if your tanks pop smoke or such, and white, I guess, is for, like, everything else as it's needed. Just to help keep track of, you know, you have something here, you know, put a little pin on the table and say, don't forget your supplies going on over here. I know it's been something that I've always liked the idea of, but I've never actually done it. I know the box that I have right now is a little too big to keep it convenient, but that's something I'm working on right now, especially when I'm trying to get a little more into, you know, aggressive, not quite maybe tournament on a regular basis, but I like to think I can hold my own, and how to just get the game to play smoother and a little more quickly, I suppose, just to get all the tools I need all in one spot.
Okay. For me, it's just trying to get my Thousand Sons done. Got as much as I could get done for DaleCon, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But yeah, I think the goal for me is to have everything ready for what we call our D Company Big Game, which is going to be in February, first week in February. As much as I can, pushing to get stuff done for DaleCon. And I can proudly say I didn't play with any unpainted models, which was nice. Friend Mark and I were playing a game, and he and I always try to just do that, just as a matter of pride. It's not that's bad.
It's just, you know, it's like, you know, the game feels a little nicer if everybody's painted instead.
They do. It does. And I think to a certain extent, and this is nothing against people who don't paint, I think it's kind of a sign of respect a little bit for the people you're playing. You come serious about the hobby a little bit. And nothing wrong with coming with unpainted models. That's fine. As long as you're enjoying the game, that's really what matters more than anything. So, and I know I want to get a couple of the things painted, speed painted this week for the event that's coming up, the Konar, the Fate of Konar thing. I want to drop a couple other deals in there. So that's about it for our hobby progress. Your work on 8th with all that coming out, interrupting your AOS progress?
Not at all. As last Friday, I ended up getting together with my girlfriend. We got together a 1,000-point list. We ended up having the Lizardmen fighting against my Warriors of Chaos. We ended up playing one of the scenarios on the books. And it was just, you know, fight over the center point, and whoever sat on the center point, you know, had victory points for the end of the game. It ended up getting really close, you know, ended up beating each other for a while, chasing each other around the table. It was really nice seeing her Storys Guard, or the cavalry, you know, rushing around the board to go try to get at my back lines, but I was able to, you know, try, you know, refuse right, run away from them, and able to, you know, actually chase down her Carnosaur with a unit of like 20 Chaos Warriors.
Oh, geez.
Ensued pretty crazily, so.
That's fun. That's great. Yeah, for me, it has, for sure. I want to be ready for, I know Brendan, the guy we're going to talk about in a little bit in terms of our next episode. I did an interview with him, Brendan Melnick, but he's really trying to convince me to do the doubles thing on Friday, so I'm trying to get ready for that with some more painting, but I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, so. No, I know I ended up playing that at Adepticon last year, and it was a ton of fun. But it's, you know, trying to, you know, look forward to what do we want to do, how cool synergies do we want to work together, but I also know there's the General's Handbook 2 coming out relatively soon. So there's only so much, you know, prep you can do this early in the year, but you can still kind of look at it going, okay, you can get this army with that army. At the moment, it looks like they will work. So you can at least have a couple steps, you know, leading into the new rule set, you know, what you're looking for, how you want things to interact.
Okay, so we're good. So yours hasn't been interrupted, mine has. So there we go, but we got plenty of time before Adepticon. So hobby thoughts, priming. How do you prime? What do you use for priming your models, base coating?
Yeah, for the most part, I've been using the Games Workshop brand priming. The black primer works really well. It's really nice. It's really smooth. It helps, but as I said, I played a Black Templar, so it can do the base coat of black, and it goes on really nice and thin. But I still end up doing the
base layer of black as well, just to make sure you get all the little nooks and crannies. And then from there, it's able to pick up the lighter colors really well, actually. Because I know one of my worries was trying to paint white on black. It actually worked out pretty well. I know I was working with the white primer for the Games Workshop primer, and that one is a little fussy sometimes. If it's too humid out, it will go on a little dusty. However, if you just get, you know, a wet toothpick to go and try to, like, rub off any of the dusty effect after it's dried for, like, 10, 15 minutes, it usually works out fairly well.
As far as priming, I use Army Painter. I've used Army Painter forever, and I have a confession. I don't wash my resin. Some people are going to go, oh, my gosh, I can see the eyes opening wide. But Army Painter has just done a fantastic job for me. I've never had a problem with chipping or cracking or anything else. So it's just a matter also of getting used to using it. Because a lot of people are a little hesitant to use rattle cans.
Yeah, it's just different for them and they aren't quite sure how to use it.
Right. And so once you get used to it, it's fine. I know some people use Krylon. I know that's a thing for some folks. I know when I paint my vehicles, especially the bigger ones, I'll go out and get some Krylon, and it obviously adheres really well to the resin, but I don't wash my resin. And in terms of airbrushing, I think that's just a matter. It would be wonderful to have one. It'd be wonderful to have a place to use it. But as we've talked before, the problem is I don't have a place to use it here. I can't go out on my porch because there's always a little bit of wind. I don't want to get overblow on my windows, because the porch is right outside the windows where I live. And the only place I can really do anything is downstairs in the parking garage, underground parking garage.
That's a great idea, doing spray painting down in the closed space.
Yeah, that's great. Fortunately, I have a good mask, so I don't have to worry about sucking in all those VOCs, but that's really the only place I can do it. And there's no electricity down there to plug, even if I had an airbrush. There's no way it would work. So I think people just have to figure out what works for them. But those are a couple things. You're using the GW stuff, I'm using Army Painter. There's always something. I would just kind of try some different things and see what works for you. And a lot of it has to do with the base coat that you want. For my Thousand Suns, there's a color. It's a crystal blue color. I used it on my Seraphon last summer. It worked great. It was perfect blue for Seraphon. And it's a really nice base coat for my Thousand Suns, which do the blue and gold. But one of the nice things about Army Painter is they have a lot of colors that match some Citadel paint pots really closely. So if you can figure out what color matches with it and you have issues, you need to spot, do a little bit of spotting, and that works really well. So I think that's it. Anything else on hobby progress or hobby thoughts?
I don't think so, but yeah, it is important to, you know, get a good foundation for your painting project. You know, don't use, or you could use, you know, $3 spray can off the shelf at a hardware store. Just make sure it actually, you know, goes on nicely, evenly, and not too thick, otherwise you'll start losing details and such. But so, like a lot of projects, you get a good foundation, you'll get a real nice project working off of that as well.
Sure, and you can usually tell. You're right, that foundation is important. You can usually tell right away, once it dries, how it looks and if it's going to work right for you. So, okay, so we're done with On the Bench. Our next regular segment is called Whispers from the Warp, and we'll be right back with that.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Okay, guys, we're back. Whispers from the Warp is going to be where we talk about events, either recent events or coming events, games played that we've had in the last however many weeks since we talked to you, were with you the last time. The most recent event we want to talk about is something called DaleCon, named after the individual who sponsors it at his home. He and his wife, his wonderful wife, Beth, are just really gracious to open their home to us. And Dale basically rebuilt his basement. He has staging tables around the edges of the whole room. We had six game tables down there last night playing, and some people bring tents to camp out in his yard overnight. That's always fun.
Yeah, guys can come hang over, so it's not just, you know, crash on the couches. Hey, you guys can actually, you know, somewhere a bit nicer to stay.
Yeah, and a lot of things with D Company is you learn when you get to know them better. A lot of it's because alcohol is very much a part of our culture.
Here's to 5 miserable months on the wagon and all the irreparable harm that it's caused me.
And people just don't want to drive home after drinking so much, which is wonderful, you know, that they're cognizant of that. So DaleCon is an annual event, usually in the summer, and it's just kind of a throwdown. You kind of get grudge matches going, or a lot of us will write narratives because we're really a group of casual narrative players, and we'll write a backstory, and then we'll play a game, and then we'll follow up with that. But just a lot of that going on. There was a floor game, Theo. I know you did. You threw down with some Warhounds and some other crazy crap.
That was one of the games we played. It ended up being just under 300 power points. It was a Reaver, two Warhounds, and an Imperial Knight apiece. Game ended up taking about an hour or so, but it still ended up, you know, playing really nice and quick. It was great to see enough floor games in there. And there's still enough space to be on the floor and play and still see five other game tables in use. It was a real nice, you know, change of pace to see other than inviting someone over, you know, play in their basement. And there's, you know, one table and you kind of shuffle sideways throughout the whole space. But no, it was real nice to see. And, you know, it provided food and drinks for us as well. So we're able to, you know, not just, okay, here's, you know, a can of soda and probably squish yourself like sardines into here and see what you can do. But
no. Yeah, there's plenty of room, plenty of seating. I mean, the food, Theo mentioned the food just now. Oh, my. We can't even describe it to you. I mean, Dale is just a crazy man when it comes to food for us. He did a couple of beer can chickens. He always roasts a pig, and we get to pull that thing apart and eat it. And there's chips, and there's, you know, veggie plates, and there's his wife made this totally evil in a good way. Evil cheese dip thing with sausage in it and all that kind of stuff.
That one was so good.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. We just couldn't stop. The thing was half empty. I don't know how that happened. Just a wonderful time. And it's usually about, I think there are about 15 of us by the time we were all there. So it's about half a D company shows up. It's down kind of southwest of Milwaukee, about an hour, 45-minute drive. But a great event. A lot of people, again, stay overnight and get a couple games in this morning, probably. I know I didn't, but I usually leave later that night. But it's a wonderful thing. And there's going to be some posting again on the D Company forums. If you look that up on Google, we really encourage you to check that out, because we're going to be talking about other things that D Company does. So that's a recent event. I got a game in with my friend Mark, who I don't see very often. And that was wonderful. We kind of have a narrative going, a narrative story. And yes, Mark, you finally beat me. I'll admit it on air. So he was talking about that, but it was a really good experience. And I played Custodians for their first time, and that's just nuts, especially in a non-competitive setting. They were just crushed. It was like three wounds, toughness five, and they got a three-up save with their three-up invulnerable save. You just can't kill them. It was nuts. I was shooting the heck out of him, and I couldn't do it. I, you know, was really having trouble with him. So that was kind of an eye-opener, because Chuck, one of the guys, he had 25 of those things on the board. It was just nuts.
That's rough to see. Like, I know Terminators have gotten tougher this edition, but seeing, you know, how many multi-wound creatures are on the table, but still feels like you have, you know, a decent amount of guys out there is a real nice change of pace to see, I think.
It was nuts. I mean, I'm like, what, toughness five? Terminators? How many wounds? Three wounds. Everybody's all hanky about, you know, that they've got two now, and these things are just insane. And their weapons do D3 damage immediately. Oh, come on. Like, wow. So anyway, it was good. It was great. And you played, Theo, I know you played your Templars, right?
Yeah, I ended up playing those over the weekend. I ended up playing against someone playing the Raven Guard for the first time, you know, finally doing inventory for the new edition. I ended up playing 50 power for that. The Black Templars, I think I had a bit of an advantage because my dice weren't absolutely horrendous. You know, tactics weren't bad for my opponent. Playstyle wasn't bad at all. It's just couldn't roll the hit, couldn't roll the wound. Dice wouldn't let her do anything at all. So it was real tough to, you know, try to fight back at all.
I know that feeling, because I think after my last game, I think I dreamed of skulls, because my ones are skulls on my dice, and I just rolled, and Mark would tell you, I rolled so many. One time I rolled three out of four dice were skulls. It was like, come on, man. Anyway.
But the next set, I ended up getting the just under 300 power Titan floor game, where I was told, Dale, who runs this, wanted to test out the super heavy rules and bring your super heavy. So I got my two little suitcases along full of Titans, brought those along, there's some tray on the floor, they taped down a rug, so we're able to go play there, beat each other up. By the time the game took about 45 minutes to an hour, the game lasted 2.5 turns, and there's the real difference to see how D weapons used to be, where they could just templates hit multiple units, everything gets destroyed. Now it's each gun picks a unit and deals a whole bunch of damage to that one unit, but it's not one gun hits three different units and now you roll for all three units to take damage. It's just this one target gets hit really strong. So that was a real nice difference to see, is they're big, they're tough, but they aren't going to destroy absolutely everything now. The last game I ended up playing was 85 power, and was playing pairs. So the player, my first time playing against the Space Marines, she actually invited me back to go play as another Imperial player to go fight against two other Chaos
players. That's great.
So that was kind of nice to, you know, hey, you beat me up the first time, let's go fight together and go beat some other people up, so.
That's wonderful, nice.
It was really cool to see, because I know the Chaos guys ended up having a Chaos Cultist was like 40 guardsmen in one squad. God. Chaos Marines are 20 in another squad, watching that come rushing at me going, okay, so I'm a melee army, but this is a lot of guys. It was a real nice fight, there's, you know, big brawl in the middle. But bringing Terminators and Assault Marines, and I was paired with Sisters of Battle, so they had the Seraphim Assault Infantry, so they were able to drop in on the backboard. So it was real nice to have this big wave of chaos coming rushing at us. We were able to go drop, you know, Deep Strike or teleport their back line all of a sudden. Chaos Bikes are flying around our flanks on the Devastator's
nice.
Spawn, so
cinematic for sure.
Oh, it was beautiful. We got a handful of pictures of that, but there's like little fights all over the place, and it was really cool trying to get a feel of how all the assaulters attack at first, but the defenders are able to spend their command points to be able to attack back to make sure they still get their fight in, and then you're trying to figure out which unit do you want to fight in order. If the attacker already attacked you, you don't need to attack back right away because they're not a threat anymore.
That is one of the things I love about the command points, the way the command points in Assault interact. Because I made that mistake really early in one of my first games, and I picked the wrong assault, and it cost me all of my warp talents if I had done it in a different order. And I'm thinking, yeah, these guys are going to go in the next assault, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm throwing two command points down. The other guy just goes out of sequence. I'm like, I'm screaming, and I know my guys are going to die. And it was great, though.
No, that's what I'm starting to realize, is I have a feeling that'll be getting used a lot. So it's okay, so even if you assault first, everything charges, and your entire army's attacking first. But you still have to pick which one unit is going to attack first, because you know your opponent's probably going to attack back to try to lessen the blow, which is a real kind of cool tactical feel I didn't see when I'm just looking at the rule book up until I'm actually playing with the figures on the table, realizing, yeah, the bad guys can actually swing back at me. So that was a nice realization to see before we start playing, you know, bigger or more games here. But it was a nice realization of just
what the game is now.
Yeah, and it's not just I show up, I attack first. I'll always hit first kind of thing. So it's a nice change of pace, even from just, you know, initiative, guardsmen attacking Eldar, as rare as that might be. The guardsmen still have a chance to actually, you know, hit the Eldar before they all...
Sure, yeah, it's nice to see that the guardsmen charge against the Eldar. Again, that's cinematic, and it's wonderful, because you'd never see that before, or else they didn't. They'd always go last and always get killed. And yeah, that's great. Right. That's great. So that was Dale Kahn. And some things we got coming up, we're just going to talk about them. And if you go to our website, again, cubicshenanigans.net, you can see we do have an active calendar on there. We're going to put stuff up. We have a starter event for the Konar, Fate of Konar campaign coming up a week from today. We're recording on the 22nd. And next Saturday at our local GW store, they're going to be having an event, kind of mini tournament thing where you kind of put all your units in a hat and pick them out and see what you get. So that should be kind of fun. Another thing to mention, it's a AOS event, is Slobberknocker. I think it's in Oklahoma City on the 4th and the 5th. That's coming up pretty soon. RockCon, which is a big thing here for D Company, is down in Rockford, Illinois. It's on October 21st and 23rd. We usually have a big corner of the gaming hall they give us to have open gaming. And that's what we do, kind of like a Dale Con at another con.
And just a bigger location. I know I've been going to RockCon for plenty of years before. Even new D Company, I always looked in the corner. I saw they have the little banner up there. And it wasn't until the last couple of years that I'm going, oh, these guys. Oh, hey, look at that. It's another chance to get together with people from, you know, outside Milwaukee area and all over, just, you know, run into faces again and say hi again. So that's always a real nice one to see, just meet up with your friends again. So.
And no matter what you play, there are 30Kers there. They have a mini AOS tournament. They have a mini 40K tournament, Warhammer 40K. So if you're a board game person, they have board games. They have historical miniatures. It's just, if you're in the area, it's a really interesting thing to check out. And again, that's down in Rockford on October 21st to 23rd. And then the last thing to mention, SoCal Open is going to be the same weekend. It's out in Del Mar, I believe, in California, sponsored by Frontline Gaming. So that's the 22nd through 23rd. I think that's up. We're going to have links with all the things on our calendar. So if you're interested in those particular things, just click on them and it'll take you to the site. A couple other things of note, LVO is now up both in terms of hotel blocks, I believe, although I'm sure they're filling up really fast. And registration just opened, I think, on the Friday, I think it did. I just saw, so I got an email about that. Also, Adepticon, the hotel blocks opened and they very quickly filled up. As Theo just found out within, what, 10 hours or something?
It seemed, you know, open up on the evening, go check it out the next day. And all of a sudden realizing, you know, all the hotel spots were filled up already. So now I started to check out, you know, other little hotels nearby that aren't too far away. And, you know, hiking it, and I guess every morning you go play with the army guys all day. So I
thought that was interesting too, is how late, and some people told me that last year was my first Adepticon, but they told me how late the registration was. Normally it's a lot earlier, and I was kind of surprised that LVO has opened up their registration already. Adepticon was November last year. It's like November 8th. I almost remember the date because I was right at my computer at 8 o'clock at night, just ready to jump on the events already. Keep an eye out for that, and we'll certainly post something if we find out when the registration is going to be, or Adepticon, you can go through that. A couple other things in terms of gameplay and Whispers from the Warp, that kind of stuff. Thoughts on General's Handbook 2? We're gonna kind of hold that because we do have our next episode, which we're hoping to post probably in a week and a half to 2 weeks. We've got a gentleman named Brendan Melnick, who's a real leader here in our local AOS community. He's going to come on board. He's been involved in both 40K and Age of Sigmar, but he's going to give us his thoughts in the General's Handbook and those kind of things. As far as the new Space Marines Codex, Theo, what are you thinking? What are you seeing?
I'm actually really looking forward to that. I like how the Space Marines Codex is more of an addition onto the rule set instead of just completely replacing it. So I know if you play just the Ultramarines, you're able to use just the core book, or the core index, I suppose. But then if you wanted to play some of the, you know, not-so-codex, you know, following chapters, you're able to get the codex and then play based off of that. So I know, looking how Age of Sigmar has been built off, you don't need all of the specific faction books if your faction is already in the core index. I know, you know, the example I was going to use is my girlfriend plays the Pestilence Skaven, so she's able to go pick up the Pestilence book and get a couple extra formations, a handful of fluff, really cool paint jobs for there. But I play the Skaven side of Skaven, and their formation is still in the core Chaos book. So there is no addition onto it, but personally, I don't think it really needs any more. So I'm looking forward to see how, if you want to play this other chapter, you can get other information from it, as well as upcoming Orcs, Grey Knights, Eldar, you know, all the other different factions. Everybody's getting more stuff, but it's not actually replacing anything.
So right, I think
it's a nice change to see in this hobby.
To kind of piggyback on what you were talking about, I think for me it's going to be a supplement, almost. A rule supplement for Space Marines. I know some of the things they're including relics, they're including chapter tactics. There's some other special things that they have, special additions, like you said, to the rules, not really replacing anything. But I'm looking forward to seeing what that comes, because when Chaos comes out, I'm sure it's going to be the same kind of format, which will be wonderful. And I know there's specific chapter tactics, because a lot of people have already talked about them. We're not going to talk specifically about those, but seem to be interesting and kind of give each of those different.
It gives them a little bit of a feel for, you know, you do this one thing, you'll do it a little better than others, but not, you know, completely rewriting the rule set to make you, hopefully not too overpowered, but just, you know, a little better at what you already do to make it feel a little more focused.
And it's funny when you talk about each chapter, you know, making it more focused. It's funny because a lot of the podcasts, that you can just tell the competitive guys already, because they're out there, oh, this one's no good, or this one's better. Or it's just, it made me chuckle when I'm listening to the guys talking about it, like, oh, this one's the strongest, this is number one, this is the worst one. Hey, from a casual narrative perspective, it's great, because now I have more story to tell.
Exactly. And that's the one I was looking at, is the Black Templars. Oh, you get reroll the charge. Oh, yeah, it's not that great. But when you look at it, I'm already playing this army, and now you're giving me a reroll to do the thing I was already going to be doing. Personally, I think that's a great thing. But, you know, everybody has their own little niche that they're able to work with, so I think that'll actually work out really well.
And the other bonus with this is I'm hearing that they're going to actually be, with each codex, they're going to be coming out with a set of data cards, which is wonderful to hear that. They said 80-plus for the Space Marine Codex, which is great. I mean, that's really cool that they're doing that. I don't care what size they are. They can be 3x5s. They can be, you know, half of an 8x whatever. But just the fact that they're actually doing that is really, really a big benefit, I think, and says something about how they're marketing and how they're aware of what the kind of play aids and things people need. So that's really good stuff.
Yeah, because I saw you were making your own little, like, info cheat sheets just to help keep track of everything. But now to see, you know, Games Workshop is also making sure, as everybody makes their own little cheat sheets and note cards and little flip open whatever's to make their game easier, Games Workshop is also doing that, going, okay, so here are the high points to make sure nobody forgets about, I think is also really nice. And you could also, you know, shuffle the deck up and deal them out if you want to use a mission, if you want to use objectives, if you want to do even placement on the table, just how your armies are deployed, I think is really cool. So you can leave those on the table and not have to bookmark a dozen pages in your book just to recall what you're actually trying to do for the game.
Sure, and flip it back and forth and back and forth. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I think that's it as far as Whispers from the Warp. Is there anything on 8th so far specifically? A couple things that you want to talk about, play so far? Any things you've noticed about 8th or you've enjoyed about 8th?
One of the things I really noticed, especially against playing against the Chaos Army, is just how many more infantry is on the table. I know that's one of the things I've always liked. I've played Gene Stealer Cult before, and I'd be fielding, you know, 40 infantry on the table. And the one more noticeable games I've played was against the Inquisition, and he had 15 figures.
Yeah.
And I look at this going, I have almost as many units as you have individuals. But I know there's a lot of people who are relying on vehicles before. The vehicles are still important to help you get across the field faster, but it's kind of nice to see just the number of bodies showing up, because the weight in numbers and the weight of attacks and the dice roll really makes a difference. Even if you have a squad of Terminators and power armor, or their Terminator armor and combat shield, they have a 2-of, 3-of invulnerable. If you need to make, you know, 20 saves, people are still going to start dropping pretty quick.
Speaking of that, that's really interesting that you mentioned that specifically, because Mark Deepstruck from the Teleportarium, whatever it is now, his a squad of Terminators and a Terminator Chaplain, and I had all three of my Psykers who could do full-blown smite, and I had a Leviathan with a Butcher Cannon Array. And man, just between the mortal wounds and that volume of fire from that Butcher Cannon, it did him in. And it was really interesting to see. Again, it was the volume of dice, really, that you mentioned. And that's always an issue. It's always an issue with any game we play here.
Yeah, but I do think it is a kind of nice, you know, it kind of keeps the rock, paper, scissors. You have your heavy infantry, which are really good at beating up, you know, monstrous creatures. Monstrous creatures can, you know, wade through hordes of infantry because they just, you know, that much they can do. But then hordes of infantry can just overwhelm the specialists. So you still need to do the mixed combat. So it's not just I run all tanks with no infantry support, because then your tanks just get overrun with bodies, especially if they just have wounds and toughness. Now, sure, it'll take a while to do it, but everything is still vulnerable to each other, but there's still that rock, paper, scissors involved of everybody still has a focused job.
Absolutely.
Just trying to figure out what that new balance is with the rules and everything getting changed around on us as well.
Okay, I think that's it. And anything else? Then we're going to move on. Folks, we're going to go to a segment we call The Emperor Protects, or depending on your perspective, The Emperor Lies. So we'll be right back with you with that segment.
You're tearing me apart! You say one thing, he says another, and everybody changes back again!
Okay, we're back, and we're here with the segment we call The Emperor Protects or Lies. We talk here really about just general stuff that has to do with the hobby and new things coming out and things we wanted to talk about or questions we wanted to ask. So the first thing is how they're advancing the storyline. We just want to kind of give our opinions about that. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly? For me, it's been really good. I've really enjoyed the backstory, the lore that they built up with Wrath of Magnus and then following the destruction to Cadia and then following with the Primarch coming back, with Guilliman coming back. I think it's just been a really good way to move things forward. Because the world was becoming truly stagnant in terms of the lore. It's always interesting. You always got a lot of the Horus Heresy stuff, which both of us are big lore people. I know I am. I'm huge on reading and listening to audiobooks. But important part of my hobby. In fact, in terms of ranking things, I think the lore is the most important part to me. And then modeling and hobbying is the second most important. Then the playing really for me is a third priority if the other two things are in order. I'm really good with the way they've advanced the storyline. And I'm going to talk specifically in our next segment called The Scriptorium about a couple of things and a book in particular that's done just an exceptional job of moving the storyline forward. And what do you think, Theo?
I also really think the story's been advanced pretty well. I knew it was kind of leading up to, you know, Chaos being a bigger part with the whole Cadian gate getting fractured. There's a whole fight on Cadia for the next, you know, assault. I knew it wasn't very obvious of where this game was going, but having the same, you know, setting for 15, 20 years of it's, you know, minutes to midnight, everything's going to happen. But I really like how Games Workshop has followed through, you know, say after the bell tolled, the Cadian gate cracked, and it's just thrown everybody into a mess. It's also, I think Games Workshop handled it really well with all the dozen-odd factions in the system of just how everybody is still interacting with the mess that Chaos is making now. Either orcs are, you know, do the orcs have their endgame now? They want to fight everybody. They've been fighting everybody, so in their eyes, they've already won.
Which, just to interrupt real quick and then let you keep going, But the whole orc thing, I think that's really important to mention, because the orcs are actually playing a really interesting part. They talked about the Battle of Armageddon now has continued, but there was a demonic incursion, and the orcs ended up fighting with the humans, fighting with the Imperium.
Yeah.
And you think, what are the chances of that? And that's just so cool that they came up with that idea.
Just because, you know, everybody, and that's where it was looking before, was the alliances have come, the apocalypse. Well, the apocalypse has come. So again, if you have a good narrative, you could pair up anybody with anybody and still work it through. Either you have a Dark Eldar raiding party is picking on everybody, so, you know, Eldar and Chaos Marines would want to go fight them off. Just because, you know, you guys are still causing trouble. Yeah, there's the Inari and everybody's working together and all that, but there's people out there who just want to go cause trouble and gain power for themselves and still niche out their own little corner of the galaxy to live on.
I mean, I would love to see a couple of the guys from D Company get an orc and an Imperial Guard guy on the other side of the table, and then have my Thousand Sons and some other Chaos guys on the other side. I mean, that would be really cool to play a game like that, and it would be very consistent with what they're doing in the story right now.
Yeah, no, that's also one of the things I really like to do, is you go pull scenarios out of the books we play and then just recreate this little battle here. Because, you know, Caithus Cain has one where it's, you know, Chaos Guardsmen are fighting their Imperial Guardsmen. So you have a battle of 100 on, like, 30... But you still have the defenses, and that's, you know, in the rule book now you can get, so you can have your Imperial Fortress walls and all the defenses on there as you're trying to crack the walls and get in, so you can still lead the story, but pull it back into the book, or into the tabletop end of it, and still have it all still fit in the setting, which is really cool to see.
That is neat. It is great. So yeah, we're both in agreement. I think that the way they're advancing the storyline is certainly good, classified as good. So here's my question. This is an interesting question. I've been tempted to write about it in Bowls. Did Gulliman actually speak with the Emperor? You know, this to me is such an interesting question, because I'm reading Dark Imperium now by Guy Haley. And when you think about what Gulliman has done in the last 100 years, and the Dark Imperium actually is 100 years from when he first came back. There's a lot of stuff that's gone on. It just seems so stupid to me when they were like, yes, I'm going to go in the Emperor's presence. I'm going to stay there for, I don't know, 24 hours or who knows how long he was really in there. And to think about the fact that nobody's been in there. Nobody knows. The Emperor, we know he's, I don't care which side you're on. We know he's a corpse. He's just, there's just this flesh connected to electronics. They're still sacrificing 1,000 people a day, you know, but I just can't believe it. Personal opinion is that Gulliman was so shocked at what he saw when he went in there. He was just, I think he was just going, what do I do now? I got to figure this out myself, because there's just this thing sitting in this chair. And he wasn't getting any feedback. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Listeners, let's be honest, all right? He wasn't getting any feedback from this guy. There's no spirit in there. There's just stuff. It's just funny to me. They even included that in the fluff. I thought it was kind of weird. But fortunately, they continued the story, because Gulliman, being who he is, was able to collect himself and come out and say, yes, the Emperor gave me this, say whatever you need to tell people, you know, it's that kind of thing. Anyway, just a question to you guys to ask, you know, if you want to respond by email, send us an email at cubicshenanigans.net. We have a contact page. Let us know what you think. Did he actually speak to him, or didn't he speak to him? Let us know what that is, what your thoughts are on that. And then the next thing, Theo, I want to ask you, who do you think is going to be the next Imperial Primarch? Because we're getting really strong signals that Mortarion is going to be the next Chaos. But who do you think is going to be the next Imperial Primarch?
Well, I knew you might not agree he's an Imperial Primarch, though I think Lionel Johnson would be kind of a cool one to bring in. Just, you know, was he the loyalist? Was he not? I knew I saw on Facebook, Games Workshop, somebody was asking Games Workshop, when are the Dark Angels going to be getting their Imperial Codex or their leaks? The 40K page actually responded, going, yeah, sure, we already have your information here, and then linked the Chaos Index. Because they hate a bunch
of freaking great.
So it's really kind of amusing to see, you know, how Games Workshop is looking at their own armies, going, there's the good, there's the bad. And there's now the shades of gray as everybody's still trying to figure out what's going on. I think it'd be really cool to see them, just because I've read other books, either the 30K books or some of the other first founding stuff, just saying, he's here, this is what happened, and he's not looking at himself as good or bad, but just, here's what needs to get done. But he doesn't tell anybody what he's actually trying to do. So it leaves everybody really kind of wondering what's going on. But I'd like to see that expanded upon and to see what his response would be. Especially now that his whole planet's blown up and all that.
Sure. Going on. Yeah, and what Theo talked about at the beginning is he knows I am absolutely contemptuous of Lionel Johnson, the guy. If there's anyone, I hate him more than any of the traitor Primarchs. He's just such an idiot, especially with what he did to Luther. I mean, I'm reading the books and going, my gosh, it's amazing that Luther didn't turn on him earlier when I think about that. And just the way he treats everybody else, he's just a bonehead. So he's a git, as they say. I'm hoping that the next one's going to be Leman Russ. I really do hope it's Russ, because my first army was Space Marine, or was a Space Wolves, of course. But I just think that Russ has this side that people don't know. I think he's very thoughtful, or he can be, even though he's ferocious when he needs to be as well. And if you read the book about him as the younger, the Primarch book about Leman Russ, you know, he was trying to think things through. At the same time, he was ferocious and all those kind of things. So I'm hoping that's who it was, because the model would be just amazing for him. I know the Forge World model for him and the Heresy model was very cool. But I'm hoping it's going to be Leman Russ. And again, if you guys have some thoughts on who you want it to be or you hope it is, please send us something in. We can get an idea about that and maybe talk about it. The last thing we're going to talk about with the Emperor Protects or Lies is consistency in the lore. Just really briefly talk about that. For me, it's always interesting to read different authors who write in the Heresy in particular and see how characters change based on who's writing about them. In particular, we just mentioned Lionel Johnson, and two books with him as a primary character, Kurz as a primary character as well. They're just both portrayed so differently in these two books that are sequentially almost back to back. I just think it's interesting how the authors affect the pictures we see of individual characters. And so I don't know if it's a lack of consistency. I think it's just the individuality of how the authors see the stories and see the characters. And I find that really interesting as somebody who enjoys reading and enjoys the lore so much. What do you think, Theo?
I'm not sure if it's inconsistencies, but it's just here's how the individuals perceive it. As you're saying, you know, here's the two books written by different people on the same subject. You can still see, you know, the ball is red, it's blue. It's, you know, very different. Right, well, that's one of the nice things to see is as the books continue on, you can kind of keep looking back, even in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, the same stories of, you know, not the first founding, but the different origins of chapters or the first chapter, or why the Dark Angels have, you know, the white on there. You know, one book says it was because there's a gene stealer cult that infiltrated their planet, destroyed the population, so the five Terminators have shown up, painted their armor in white for mourning, to go chase down the gene stealer cult, and later on, it's the internal struggles and everything else is falling apart, so they paint their armor white to go on another crusade. Or could both things be happening at the same time, with just different emphasis on it, of, no, we're doing it for reason A, or we're doing it for reason B, even if both are still happening at the same time, it's just your view on it.
I think, and for those who aren't aware, one of the things that Theo's referencing, and we've talked about so many times, he's probably going, oh my gosh, he's going to talk about it again. I talked about it in the beginning, is that my first exposure to 40K was the Space Hulk box set and then the whole Deathwing story. They came back to their planet, as Theo mentioned, and it had been taken over by gene stealers, and you had Deathwing Terminators, the American Indian type of thing. There were tribes, there were hill people, and there were plains people. And I've always wondered now, years later, as you mentioned it, Theo, like, that's nothing like we think about the Dark Angels, because we have the End of Angels, we have those stories, the backstories on the Dark Angels, but there's no mention there of another home planet. So is that Caliban? Really interesting now that I ask the questions. I don't care, because I enjoyed the story so much. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter now. But it's really interesting that you say that. Is there some kind of parallel development with these chapters, and how does that all fit together, I guess?
Because I knew the book was Deathwing, and the people there ended up trying to call upon the angels of above because they didn't understand the technology. Much like the Space Wolves have their own little tribes, you know, they go pick up the best warrior, they bring them off into, you know, the men from the stars. But the indigenous people on this planet ended up heavily intoned that it's a sign of the Aquila, because it's the giant wings of the gods above, because they didn't know any other way to call upon them, which is also one of these things that don't mean they... Dark Angels don't have somebody actually sitting and monitoring the planets to realize something's happened, that something this atrocious could happen for years, and they never actually realize it until they go back and visit their home planet and realize, hey, what's going on? Everybody here is killed off or enslaved, and they come back and find this giant mega city one kind of thing where it was just, you know, the people out in the fields, you know, living their own little life is kind of cool to see.
It is neat. And so, yeah, it's fun is in the more you read, one of the things we're hoping for, and I talk about in the purpose of the show, is to hopefully get people interested in the lore as we're talking. You know, hope you say, oh, I should read that book, or maybe I should check out that story, because the lore to me is just so important. I know there are people who just focus on the game, they focus on getting to the competitive events, and that's wonderful that you have that kind of passion for the hobby, but the backstory then adds so much more to that army you're pushing around the board. So hopefully we can motivate you a little bit and get going on that. We're going to finish The Emperor Protects Our Lies here now, and we're going to go into the next segment. It's called The Scriptorium, where we talk specifically about audiobooks or books we read recently and give you some feedback on those things we're looking at reading, recent releases, those kind of things. So we're going to be back with you in just a couple minutes with The Scriptorium,
etc., etc., etc.
Okay, guys, we're back, and this is The Scriptorium again, where we're going to go through recent reads or listens, whatever we got. And I'm going to throw out first with a book I just listened to by Chris Raitt called The Carrion Throne. I'm usually a pretty big fan of Chris's. I'm going to give this book a 4 instead of a 5, which I would normally give his books, just because the start of the audiobook was really tough to listen through, just because there was so much happening and it seemed very, very just disjointed the way the story was happening. Different places, different characters, things seemed so unrelated. And I'm just like, okay, it was like he was building the foundation. I know now that's what he was doing, but it was just really, really tough to get through. But once I did, I was richly rewarded with this huge, giant plot twist, and all this stuff is happening on Terra. There are things going on that you just wouldn't believe. There's Inquisitors stacked on top of Inquisitors, and then there's more Inquisitors. Oh, and there's another Inquisitor around the corner of a different Ordo, and really, really interesting and complex. There's a relationship between, at least an implied relationship between an older, more experienced Inquisitor and a younger one who's kind of, he's kind of mentoring. It's really cool. And so overall, I would definitely suggest, if you were into Inquisition type things or non-marine type of stories, I think The Carrion Throne is something I definitely would recommend that you give a listen to, because in the end, you're going to be very, very satisfied with the story. So Theo, what do you got? What are you looking at or reading?
Right now I'm reading Into the Maelstrom, edited by Mark Cassione and Andy Jones. It's a collection of short stories. I ended up finding it at a local bookstore for a couple bucks. Pick it up. It's real nice. You know, each story takes about 20 minutes to read. The latest one I ended up reading is The Raven's Claw by Jonathan Caron. It's about 20, 30 pages long. It starts off with a penal colony, or a penal legion, getting sent out into war. The ship ends up crashing, and then it kind of flashes to another set of characters where you have, you know, the planetary governor and his telepath are actually trying to overthrow his own city, because he's trying to just take it over and carve out his own little corner of the galaxy here, until he realizes the main characters, you know, crash landed, so he doesn't remember what's going on. He doesn't know why he's in cuffs, you know, he's strapped to the wall. The Commissar ends up showing up, dragging him and the other penal legionnaires, give him a gun, but he knows how the gun works, he recognizes it, he knows how to hold it, how to look around, but he's not sure why yet. So he's still trying to remember where he is, but as the story continues on, he's starting to get brief flashes of, like, how am I able to fight with my boot knife so effectively when, you know, these cultists are fighting back? What's going on here? And you're looking at the character going, well, you're a soldier, you've done something wrong, you should know what's going on here. Until the story continues on and you realize he's actually an assassin sent for the planetary governor, who then gets revealed, although he's trying to overthrow it, and he was given the amnesia drug, so he doesn't remember who he is. So the telepath actually can't look into him to see who he is. When they're down in the bunker trying to hide, the penal legionnaire ends up going, oh yeah, you have a telepath who can read your surface thoughts. We have our own psychers in the area who can read what he's broadcasting. You sound surprised that your deepest, darkest secrets aren't that deep and dark. You kind of should have seen this one coming. So that was a real nice, cool thing to see. You know, he ends up, you know, branding him, killing him, you know, honorably. But then they send in the white scars to go, like, trash the entire planet and start over again. But it was really cool to see, just, you know, he will let you die with honor if you admit what you've done wrong, or there's nothing we're doing here that could kill you, but that's really not going to fix the problem. We just want you to repent.
So nice.
I'm looking forward to that one. Another half dozen or so little stories in here to see, you know, the cool little twist they have on those. You think the story is, you know, pretty straightforward, you know, you're here to go fight, but a cool little twist in the end is real nice to see. And I know this book was written back in 2000 or so.
Wow.
So it's a nice twist to see how they were, you know, the books were written then compared to how do they translate currently and see if it still holds.
That gets to our exact point of consistency in the lore, which is great. Yeah, it's always worthwhile to try to find some old gems like that to see what people thought about the perspective was, and old writers like that we just don't hear about anymore, hear from.
Yeah, especially the short stories. You don't need to worry about reading a whole 300-page book and right. spending a week on it going, oh, this book right. is garbage and whatnot, going, hey, it takes, you know, half hour to read, real nice and quick, and, you know, still get a nice and cool view on the world. So.
The next book I want to talk about is Dark Imperium by Guy Haley, and I'm just so pleased with the book. I'm so impressed. Guy has just done this excellent job of translating what we're seeing in the codices and in terms of models and all those things into a story. And it takes place, spoiler alert, by the way, if you're listening, spoiler alert, I may say a few things that are going to ruin the story for you. I hope not. But again, a spoiler alert in case you're wondering and you're going to read the book. But he takes us 100 years from when Gilliman came back. And there's been this crusade going on, and there are all kinds of things going. Ultramar is being invaded now by Mortarion and the Death Guard. Ultramar, the whole system, and Gilliman has to come back. And there's I haven't gotten to the point yet, but I know there's going to be a confrontation between Mortarion and Gilliman, which I want to get the book read because I want to get to that part of the story. And one of the things that is fascinating to me, we hear physically how the Primaris Marines are different. We see it in the models. But the book is so great. If you're playing Primaris Marines, you got to read this book because it talks about how different their bodies are. They actually have extra adamantium built in. It's kind of the Wolverine thing. They got adamantium built into their bones. They have their suits, their armor. Actually does the cannoli thing where if it takes a punch, you know, it fills up with foam. So it's just all kinds of little tech things that are built into their armor and them physically that now you see the models are bigger, but you know why they're different in terms of physicality. The other thing that is fascinating that Guy writes into the story is how these Marines are actually, you see this human side that you really never, hardly ever see with regular Space Marines. Guy is talking about enjoying writing and reading poetry. You're like, whoa. Did we get another character in this story? Like, you never hear about Space Marines talking that kind of stuff. I mean, it gets to the point where most of the time when I picture a Space Marine, he's walking down this ruined city and he sees this little girl crying in a corner somewhere. He would just probably kind of look at her and just keep walking, holding his bolter. These Primaris guys, you get this feeling that if they saw this little girl crying, they would walk over and pick her up with one hand and hold her in their arms and keep walking with their bolter in the other hand. Just a really interesting perspective on them and certainly on Gilliman. You, even if you're not an Ultramarines or a Gilliman fan, you see this very different side of him than you've ever seen before when you're reading this book. And again, it all carries through with what we talked about earlier with advancing the storyline. And it does such a great job of it. So I really want to commend Guy Haley on a wonderful job of kind of following through and moving things forward in the storyline. So really, really good. Highly recommended book. It's Dark Imperium. Anything else, Theo, that you've been working on or...
No, other than just a couple of little short stories here.
But. Okay, good. That's about it. If you guys have been reading anything interesting or you want us to talk about any books that we may have read, send us an email and let us know. And certainly if I've read it or Theo has, we'll be happy to comment on it or give you some feedback and recommend it if we think it's worthwhile. Other than that, the next thing we're going to do is a part of our show we call This or That, and we'll explain what that is in a moment. Okay, guys, we're back, and this is part of the short part of the program we're going to call This or That. I certainly want to give a shout-out to the two crazy guys, Blake and Ed, over at Life After Cover Save. If you listen to it, by the way, just so you know, if you're thinking of having your young adult children listen to that, it's pretty explicit, just so you know. It's still very enjoyable to just very interesting people. I really enjoy Life After Cover Save, but one of the things they do is they used to do something called the Dirty Dozen or the Filthy 15. Obviously, that implies a little bit of something, how the questions go, but it's those psychiatric questions where they ask, do you prefer this or that? And we're going to call our segment This or That. And Theo and I are going to fire a few of those back at each other. And if we have guests, we're going to throw about a few of them at each other. Unlike the ones on Life After Cover Save, which are Coke or Pepsi, that kind of thing, these are going to be very focused on one thing, which is Warhammer. So we're going to throw this out. We don't know what's coming. Haven't consulted each other, so these questions are straight from who knows where. So, Theo, why don't you give me your five, and let's see how we go on that.
Yeah, so it's really kind of funny. I ended up writing these up before, you know, recording today, so... Well, question I had was for the Dark Angels, Luther or the Lion?
Okay, that is so simple. Luther for me. You know, you guys have figured it out by now. I'm just so contemptuous of Johnson. He's just such a git. So Luther was so patient, and just he was the loyal son for so long. He put up with so much of the Lion's foolishness, and so Luther for me for sure.
All right, next one. The Stormbolter or the Heavy Stubber?
It's so iconic. I gotta go with Bolt Gun. I just have to, because yeah, for sure.
All right, next one. When Horus ended up slaying Sanguinius, and then right before Horus went to go, you know, kill the Emperor, Olanus Pius, is he a guardsman or a Grey Knight?
Okay, there's so many ways to interpret this. If you're not sure about it, you guys should go check the Lexicanum or something else on that final confrontation. I have always thought that he was a guardsman. I just thought in terms of the story, or at least human. I don't know guardsman, but we'll say he was human. He was a crewman. He was something. I just think it would be an interesting way to interpret that scene, and that it isn't all just Space Marines and the Primarchs that are there, and there are Sanguinius and the Emperor and Horus. So I think he was a guardsman for sure, just because I think that would have made the story so much cooler.
All right, is still 40K related, Necromunda or Mordhai?
Oh yeah, Necromunda. I'm do the sci-fi little mini RPG. Although, you know, it's an interesting question that you ask, because Mordhai is much more RPG, I think, in nature than Necromunda is. Although you certainly, when you play Necromunda, or maybe it's, you know, the Shadow War Armageddon thing now, you certainly can write story and narrative. There's no doubt. It's built for that, especially Necromunda was.
You know, that's one of the things I love. Sorry about both of them, was just, you know, playing the tabletop was maybe a tenth of the storyline, but you have all the after combat stuff, and, you know, it still has a story for your war games. So it's easier to bring your friends in nice and easy. You know, you got 10 guys to work with for either Necromunda or Mordheim. Then you had the fun, you know, role playing aspect of what happened afterwards. Everybody got, you know, shot up, beat up, stabbed, left for dead.
Yeah.
And do they make it back, or are they dead left in the streets?
Yeah, that's a great thing. But Necromunda, just because I played it and I enjoyed it so much.
The last one is Gene Stealer Cultists with the Beasts of the Great Beyond, or the Chaos Cultists with Beasts from Another Dimension?
I'm going to go with Gene Stealer Cults. I just think they're so much cooler. I think it was a book written, I can't remember the author, it was called Death Watch, where a small Death Watch team came to a planet that had been started to be infiltrated by Gene Stealer cults, and they actually had an Imperial agent on the planet who was captured by the Gene Stealer cults. They figured out who he was, and they converted him. And he still was aware kind of who he was, which was kind of spooky, but I think they're just so much more creepy in a way, and I think that's kind of cool compared to the cultists who, at least anecdotally, they're always just screaming and charging and acting totally insane and stupid, and I just think the Stealer cults are so much more interesting. Subtle in a lot of ways, much more subtle. So
they're able to try to just infiltrate for generations instead of just, hey, we found this book, let's see what it does, and then create the little, you know, the cult following from there, trying to take over.
For sure. We're gonna kind of jump around a little bit in my questions. So, order or chaos? That's an AOS question for those who don't know Age of Sigmar.
I'll actually go with chaos. Not just because I play them, but I feel in the Age of Sigmar, you're able to get more of a feel for the different Chaos factions than you are in the 40K. Because I know 40K always looks at it as, you know, here's this big, huge army following the different, you know, Chaos leaders. You're trying to get more of a army feel, where the focus for Chaos kind of feels like it's more on characters, but in Age of Sigmar, you're able to get a lot more from Chaos. Instead of, you know, the Empire is, you know, they're still the same guys trying to keep a hold of their own little, you know, bubble of reality, and all the world's fractured. But you're able to get more personality, I think, out of the Chaos, with everybody's trying to step on each other's toes and try to see what they can do for...
So what you're saying after all that conversation is, it's because you play Chaos. No.
Okay. Start maybe, but...
Okay. The quintessential question is Plasma or Melta?
I'm going to have to go with Plasma. Partially playing Gene Stealer Cult or the Imperial Guardsmen, I always liked, you know, taking the handful of plasma guns, rushing up to somebody and start, you know, shooting away and shooting over charges, sure, but, you know, the gun will survive even if the infantryman doesn't. It's still able to give a punch into everything. And I know even yesterday at Dale Con, we're joking about, you know, you're trying to kamikaze on the custodians. Okay, can I just pointedly power up the plasma gun and then just hand it off to him? And just try to blow yourself up against somebody.
That's funny because in Mark's game, he had a combination of his Marines, Aaron, and a guard. And I had this giant chaos spawn charging towards a thing of his guardsmen. And that's exactly what he did. He goes, hey, if there's any time to overcharge your plasma pistol, it's when you have a giant chaos thingy charging you. So that's funny. The Emperor or Horus?
I actually kind of think Horus. Even though I generally play Imperialist in a chaos.
Heretic. Yep. Yeah, anyway.
So I do like his kind of view of just going, you know, the Emperor's, you know, leading his assault out to the stars, but he's not, you know, kind of leading along. He's just sending his sons, the emissaries, to go out and go try to, you know, take over all these planets in his name. After a while, it's, you know, the soldiers are starting to look back at the Emperor and going, hey, what are we doing here? You know, were we created as your sons, or are we created as your tools? And they're starting to question at that point, yes, you're saying we're worth all this much, but a couple of us are getting sent out to the stars, and a couple are getting sent home. You know, why do I have to get sent out here if they get to sit at home all nice and fancy, don't have to do anything, instead of meet these new races, try to talk them into, you know, joining you, or wiping out these entire civilizations because they're not going to follow you and they could be a threat at some point in the future.
Okay, so we're going with Horus, all right. Rattle cans or airbrush? If you could do either one.
I would like to think airbrush, though I've never actually used one before, so I'm not quite sure. You know, with practice, I'm sure I'd be able to pick it up a lot easier. Plus, be able to get more of the highlights or the different transitions, because I know that's one of the things I'm horrible at painting right now is flesh tones. Even on monsters or bigger things, and you have scales and such, I always prefer armor plates and whatnot, because it's base color, you do a bit of highlights. Trying to work with a Seraphon or some of Scaven Beasties, able to do little highlights with the airbrush, I think would work a lot better. So.
Okay, airbrush it is. Gen Con or Adepticon?
I have to say Adepticon, only because I've been kind of spoiled because I ended up working at Gen Con for about 10 years.
Wow.
When I was way younger. So I've kind of lost the...
When it was still in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I ended up getting a job through there up until I was mid-high school or so. So, you know, going to it now after I went to Indiana, it kind of lost its luster after, you know, working and being able to work all behind the scenes and such. But Adepticon's really nice because I started going, you know, super casual, just go for the shopping trip, and then getting more and more involved. So it's still really cool to see how the convention is still growing, getting more into the gameplay, instead of just, hey, I worked there, I could see the behind the scenes. So I'm still liking Adepticon for just how much new stuff there is for me. So
there you go. So we're going to be doing that every show, folks. And if you have any you want to send into us, that'd be great. I mean, you're tired of me saying it, but you can email us, go to our contact page, and we're going to mention that again at the show close. So we'll do that with our guests as well, just to get their thoughts and mess with them a little bit, make them make some tough choices. So other than that, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to close the show.
There is something going on around here. Something you may not even know about.
Okay, guys, we're back, and we're going to close the show out. First of all, thank you, everyone, for listening to our inaugural episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, our website is cubicshenanigans.net, and the email is shown in the will be shown in the show notes, and there is a contact page. If you click on that and send us an email what you're thinking, you got some good word for us. You want to tell us how great the show was? That's wonderful. If you have some constructive feedback, please keep it constructive. We would appreciate that as well. Otherwise, thank you again so much for taking the time out of your day or night or whenever you're listening to this thing, whether you're hobbying or you're driving or whatever else, to spend some time with us. Our next show is going to probably be posted in about our initial goal is to get one out a month, but there's so much happening, and certainly if Theo and I get more time, I know people always say you want to have a regular posting schedule, so you should look at this to come out once a month. But hopefully we're going to be on iTunes by the end of this week. We're recording on the 22nd of July. Hopefully you'll be on iTunes. Subscribe if you get a chance on iTunes, and then it'll pop up whenever it pops up. We're going to have a bonus episode coming up probably next week, about a week and a half, our interview with Brendan Melnick. It's going to mostly be focused on Age of Sigmar, but I would really recommend, having listened back to the interview, that you give it a listen, even if you're a 40K fan or a 30K fan, because Brendan's got a really, really interesting history in the hobby. Just like Theo, he started out as a child, so You know, when people say this thing looks like it was painted by a 7-year-old, it probably was. So that's kind of where we are. But take a look at that and look for that in the next week and a half or so. We'll get that to you and you'll have some more listening to do. Otherwise, take care. Theo, you have anything to close us out?
Other than the traditional hi mom out to the crowd. I know she may or may not take a listen to this, but I was, you know, she's always been proud of me, you know, going out and doing what I like and doing these crazy fun projects here. So.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, you guys take care and we'll see you next time around.